Reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sixth canto, the 17th chapter, the title of the chapter, Mother Parvati Curses, Chitraketu. And I was told to speak on text 20, but text 19 is in the board, and he only read till 18 yesterday, so I'm going to do both 19 and 20 and hope I don't get killed for it. So we'll chant 19 responsively because that's what's on the board. Naivatmana paraschapi kartasyat sukadukayo kartarang manyate trajna artmanam paramevacha naivatmana paraschapi Kartasyat sukadukayo Katarang manyate tajya Atmanam paramevacha Naivatmana naparaschapi Kartasyat sukadukayo Kartarang manyate trajya Atmanam paramevacha Vaishnavas?
Naivatmana paraschapi Kartasya sukadukayo Kartarang manyate trajya Atmanam paramevacha Naivatmana paraschapi Kartasya sukadukayo Kartarang manyate trajya Atmanam paramevacha Naivatmana paraschapi Kartasyat sukadukayo Kartarang manyate prajna Atmanam paramevacha
Vaishnavis? Naivatmana
paraschapi
Naivatmana paraschapi Kartasyat sukadukayo Kartaram manyate tagya Atmanam paramevacha Naiva atmana paraschapi Kartasyat sukadukayo Kartaram manyate trajya Atmanam paramevacha Naivatmana jarapati Kartasya sukadukayo Kartaram manyate trajya Atmanam paramevacha
Na Not Eva, indeed, Atma, the spirit soul, Na, nor, Para, another, friend or enemy, Cha, also, Api, indeed, Karta, the doer. Syat, can be. Sukadukayo,
of happiness and distress.
Kartaram, the doer. Manyate, considers. Atra,
in this connection.
Agya, a person not aware of the real fact.
Atmanam,
himself.
Param,
another.
Eva,
indeed.
Cha,
also. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. In this material world, neither the living entity himself, nor others, friends and enemies, are the cause of material happiness and distress. But because of gross ignorance, the living entity thinks that he and others are the cause. Purport. In this verse, the word agya is very significant. In this material world, all living entities are agya, ignorant, in different degrees. The ignorance continues very strongly in the mode of ignorance presented by material nature. One must therefore promote himself to the stage of goodness through his character and behavior, and then gradually come to the transcendental platform, or adhokshaja platform, in which he realizes both his position and the position of others. Everything is done under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The process by which the results of action are ordained is called niyatam, always working. And I'm just going to read text 20. Guna pravaha etasmin kasapa kano anugraha kasvargo naraka kova kim sukam dukam evava. Translation and purport. This material world resembles the waves of a constantly flowing river. Therefore, what is a curse and what is a favor? What are the heavenly planets and what are the hellish planets? What is actually happiness and what is actually distress? Because the waves flow constantly, none of them has an eternal effect. Purport. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Miche Mayara Vashe Yacha Beshe Kacha Habudubabai. My dear living entities, within this material world, why are you being carried away by the waves of the modes of material nature? Jiva Krishna Das, A Vishvas, Karle Tara Dukanai. If the living entity tries to understand that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, there will be no longer any misery for him. Krishna wants us to give up all other engagements and surrender unto him. If we do so, where will be the cause and effect of this material world? There is nothing like cause and effect for the surrendered soul. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in this regard that being put into the material world is like being thrown into a mine of salt. If one falls into a mine of salt, he tastes only salt wherever he goes. Similarly, the material world is full of miseries. The so-called temporary happiness of the world is also misery. But in ignorance, we cannot understand this. That is the actual position. When one comes to his senses, when he becomes Krishna conscious, he is no longer concerned with the various conditions of this material world. He is not concerned with happiness or distress, curses or favors, or heavenly or hellish planets. He sees no distinction between them. Om Aginat Mirandasya Ganan Ginat Akaya Chakshur Unmilatang Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Kritivachalam Pangam Langayate Gurim Yat Kripa Tvam Aham Vande Shri Guru Dinataranam. So these two verses, we continue to hear the prayers or the response of Chitraketu to Mother Parvati. And as we've heard in many classes previous to this one, it's quite astounding to see his ability to accept the difficulty without the usual reaction, without getting upset or angry, and seeing, truly seeing, an example of someone who's equal in all situations. It's described in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verses 52 and all the way through 56 and 57, that one who sees with equal vision suffering and not disturbed, not elated when there's happiness, sukesho vigatasprihā, not overwhelmed when there's happiness or miserable when there's distress. He's unaffected by good and bad. This is a sign of somebody who's achieved spiritual awakening, and even more so when one has come in contact with the Supreme Personality and Godhead and developed love for him. When someone develops love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he just remains focused on that and everything else is secondary. He uses everything in Krishna's service. We hear from Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion that we have yukta varaga. Everything can be used in Krishna's service. But at the same time, we're constantly fixed, absorbed in serving Krishna. That is the position that we see here in Chitraketu. And at the same time as we're observing Chitraketu kind of from a distance, looking at this exalted person going through this labyrinth of experiences, from the death of his child all the way through now, and it's going to continue for a while as he becomes embodied in the form of a demon. And we'll see that even though he was cursed, actually, I was looking deeply into his curse, and he was cursed to take birth in the family of a demon. So he got the body of a demon because he was born into a family of a demon, but he had the consciousness of a devotee. He never had the consciousness of a demon. Like you see when the Jaya and Vijaya, they were cursed to take birth three times as demons, or they chose to take birth three times as opposed to five times as devotees or six times, three times as demons. They had the consciousness of demons. They dealt with Krishna as if they were demons. But Chitraketu never did that. He had the body of a demon. It was big and ugly. And yet, when he came in contact with Indra, who was a devotee, he was preaching to him. He was more of a devotee than Indra was in some way. So he never really succumbed to the consciousness of a demon. And we'll discuss that a little bit more in a little while. But nevertheless, we look at Chitraketu, and we have to be very careful. Because sometimes, when we read the Bhagavatam, we read these stories, and they're kind of fantastic. You know, they're beyond our capacity to understand. Often I use Chitraketu's experience with his wives and the death of his child as an example of experiential learning when I teach teacher training. So yes, it certainly is, but how many of us can do those things, right? Let's see who can conjure up give somebody some sweet rice and have them have a child and then see into the future and know they're going to be killed and it's going to cause distress and then come back a few days later and say, so what happened with this and what are you going to learn from it in the future? So this is the situation with Chitraketu, and yet it has an application in our lives. And we have to look for that application. When we read Srila Prabhupada's books, we should read Srila Prabhupada's books with a mentality of self-analysis. What does this have to do with me? How will this experience of reading Srila Prabhupada's books and vicariously going through the experiences of so many different devotees, there's so many different devotees that we read about in the Bhagavatam. In this particular canto, the sixth canto, we're focusing, Prabhupada said, on Poshanam, the tendency of Krishna to always protect his devotees. And we see as the stories unfold, he protects his devotees in very different ways. And his devotees also protect his devotees in very different ways by giving them different experiences and different advice. And by hearing that advice and taking those experiences to heart, trying to learn from those experiences, these devotees get the protection of Krishna, and they make spiritual advancement. So the essence of what's going on in these parts of the Bhagavatam and in our lives as well is that Krishna is giving us lessons. He's giving us experiences, and if we look at those experiences critically with an attitude of self-analysis, we will gain a lot from those experiences, and those experiences will mold us, will help us to become better devotees. There's a saying that sometimes we pray to Krishna or to God to please change our circumstance. You know, we have some pain in some part of our body, the neck or elsewhere, and we pray, Krishna, please take this pain away. Please get this person who's a pain in my neck out of the way. Please change the weather. It's too cold. It's too hot. Please arrange for me to have a better, more enjoyable circumstance. And we neglect to realize that Krishna has arranged the circumstance we're in to change us. So we're asking him to change our circumstance, and we're neglecting to get the change that's intended for us. And as was said, I think, by Ruchira Mataji, that the test will come. If we don't get it now, we'll get it later. So we should have that attitude of self-analysis, not only as we read through the Bhagavatam, but as we live our lives, understanding that because we've taken up the process of Krishna consciousness, because we have some affiliation with Srila Prabhupada and the disciplic succession, because we have come and to worship Krishna, especially we're in the Dham, things happen really heavily in the Dham, in Vrindavan Dham even more than Mayapur Dham, because Mayapur Dham is a place of mercy. In Vrindavan you just get double barrel, boom, boom. Sometimes in Vrindavan it's a little bit of patting on the back and then boom. So, but we do get that that opportunity to learn, to fast forward. In teacher training, we learn that experiential learning is a way of fast forwarding our learning, because sometimes when experiences are small, we don't notice them, and we go through our life and this pain and that hassle and this trip and we deal with it. We deal with it in the next verse. It's compared to waves in an ocean. And Prabhupada uses that analogy many times. Also at the beginning, in Ajamil's story, he uses that same analogy and that same quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. And he says, the waves are coming, they're coming, they're coming. And some are good waves and some are bad waves. If any of you are sufferers or surfers, Prabhupada called sufferers, if any of you have experience with surfing, you know you're waiting for the perfect wave, right? Where is the perfect wave? People will spend hours and hours on the beach freezing to death, sometimes wearing wetsuits, waiting for the wave to come so that they can get that moment of sense gratification, then ride the wave, and then it's over, and they may even get their neck broken. But they're waiting for that perfect wave, and that's what it's like in the material world. The waves are coming, and we're waiting for the perfect wave, and somehow we get through the ones that aren't so perfect, and we neglect to understand that the vast majority aren't so perfect, and none of them are really perfect. Some of them are less unperfect than others, but none of them are perfect, and yet we go through the life and we don't really get it. So sometimes when we have a heavy experience, or when we really analyze the Bhagavatam stories, the messages in the Bhagavatam, we get a fast forward, and we can understand something without having to go through a whole life of getting beaten up by various waves. And that's what the Bhagavatam is for. That's why we're supposed to read the Bhagavatam. It's not like just a bunch of nice stories to read and be happy that we read them. So we want to learn from these stories, and it's to be noted that Srila Prabhupada came to America in 1965, 66. He came to America, came to New York, with the intention of distributing love of God. And when he came to America, he saw America. He saw a group of people, a group of situations, a set of circumstances, a lifestyle that he could have never have imagined. And even some of you who've never been outside of India, or what to speak of, never outside of Mayapur, you cannot imagine what Srila Prabhupada walked into when he arrived first in Butler, which was a rather benign American experience. He lived in the house of, he lived in a YMCA, actually, but he was associating with Sally Agarwal and her husband, Gopal. Sally was American, Gopal was Indian. But they were very Americanized, and she was Prabhupada's first experience with an American person. Prabhupada learned from her. He learned how to do his laundry. He learned how to take a shower. Those are all interesting stories, but I'm not going to tell you them now. But he learned about frozen food and supermarkets and cooking in American circumstances. But that was nothing. That was nothing compared to what he saw when he came to New York, and then when he went to San Francisco. And he saw the degradation of the people in that place, and not only the degradation of the people, but the pull, the degradation of the society, and how the society pulls. It's like, it's not just a wave, it's an undertow. You know, sometimes, almost every year, we lose somebody in the Ganga, because the Ganga appears to be very soft on its surface, and there's little waves, and we think, no problem. You know, there's a sign that Prabhupada got, and a fence that says, don't swim outside, but we think, you know, that's for neophytes. I'm an experienced person. I can handle it. And then, inevitably, someone will try to swim the Ganga and get caught in some kind of undertow, some kind of undercurrent, and we'll find them way, way down somewhere days later, finished. So this is what happens, that this is what the society, that 90% of places other than Vrindavan, Mayapur, and a few other places, this is what they live in. They live in a society that's hell-bent in bringing people closer to repeated birth and death, training them up to think they need everything, that we just passed a holiday called Black Friday. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Black Friday. Generally, black is considered like a negative thing, and you think Black Friday must be some kind of like Halloween-like ghastly experience with, you know, goblins. But actually, Black Friday is a positive thing, supposedly. It's supposed to be the day when all the businesses which are in the red all year because they're in debt, because no one's buying their junk. On Black Friday, they get in the black. so they have so many sales, and people come insanely eager. And it starts at 3 o'clock in the morning. Instead of going to Mangal Arati, they go to the mall, right, to buy things at sales. As the day gets older, the sales get less. So the morning and the late night are the times when the craziness is at its peak. So Prabhupada walked into that society, that crazy society, that soul-killing society, and he could acknowledge, he acknowledged the fact that to give us Krishna consciousness, we were going to have to swim uphill. We were going to have to become expert swimmers really quickly in order to ambulate through the waves that the materialistic society was conjuring up. And now those waves are starting to hit the shores of Bharatvarsha as well. You know, everybody's got their iPhone in their pocket, which connects them to everything undesirable at a moment's notice. You go in Japa time, and you can see the phones glowing in the pocket. The vibration is there. Someone's calling. So, and it's connected us. I remember in New York, we had this machine, a telex machine. It was a big, huge machine, very, very large, clunky. You had to type like this, and each key would go clunk, 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 and make a key impression on a piece of paper. And that impression would be received somewhere else, in Bombay or somewhere. And on that other end, a piece of paper would come out with a message. And we thought, wow, this is great. Srila Prabhupada, we should all get these. We should put them in every temple, because then we'll be able to communicate with everybody. All the major centers should have them. And Prabhupada said, no, it will just increase your tendency to gossip. So now we have Facebook, which facilitates our tendency to gossip in much more efficient ways than telex ever did. So we have This experience of Prabhupada, this realization of Srila Prabhupada, of what we need to go through, what the tests will be, what the demons are that are lurking in the corners, that are going to jump out of at us when we turn the corner, we have that experience. From Prabhupada had that experience. And because he had that experience, in his Bhaktivedanta purports, he gives us the ammunition with which to fight. Our acharyas, they don't really, they didn't, although in their Tri Kaligya, and they had some idea Kali Yuga was going to, you know, get worse, and the sages of Namasharanya even saw that Kali Yuga's coming, we better do a 1,000-year sacrifice to try to deal with the situation. But Prabhupada knew what it looked like. And so his purports tell us what to do, give us instruction what to do. And we should read those instructions very, very carefully and understand how we need to apply them. When Arjuna received instruction from Krishna, right, he had received 18 or 17 chapters of instruction. And at the end, Krishna said to him, "Have you listened attentively? Have you imbibed everything I said? Do you understand everything now?" And Arjuna's response was very, very telling. It was very important. He didn't say, "Yes, I believe." He said, "Karishye vachanam tava. I will do as you say. On your order, I will act." So this is the mentality of a devotee who is reading Srila Prabhupada's books with self-analysis as the goal, with conviction, with determination to become Krishna conscious. To look in each word, in each line, in each purport, and understand, okay, Prabhupada's giving me some instruction here, how do I apply this in my life? And when I understand it, I will do it. I will do it. I will change my life in some way. Incrementally, I will make a conscious effort to change a bad habit, to adopt a mode of behavior, to, in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th verse in the purport, where Prabhupada says that we can change the modes of material nature that affect us by practice, by making adjustments in our life. And by making adjustments in our life, we can put ourselves in the mode of goodness, or a little bit more in the mode of passion, or a little bit more in the mode of ignorance, by making choices. Sometimes we feel helpless. The mode of, you know, the modes of material nature we hear, diviation, gunamayi, mama maya, dratya, it's impossible. We can't, they're impossible to conquer. How are we going to do it? We need help. We need the help of Krishna. We need the help of Prabhupada. But Prabhupada and Krishna are giving us their help. Every minute of every day, Prabhupada and Krishna are giving us their help. It's here in the pages of the Bhagavatam. It's here in all Prabhupada's quoted words, which are voluminous, right? And if we read those books and listen to those tapes, those messages, those recordings, we will be able to, if we're scrutinizing, extract the instruction, and then we have to put it in practice. Right? We know that if we eat at night, for instance, we eat heavy at night, then we won't be able to get up in the morning. We'll call the mode of ignorance into our life, and when the alarm clock rings at the time when the mode of goodness is supposed to be tapping us on the shoulder, we'll say, "Sorry, not right now. I'm really tired." And then we'll hit the alarm, turn it off, and go back to sleep. And we'll find that the association that we keep, the things that we put into our ears, the things that we put into our eyes, the katha that comes out of our mouth, and the association that we take, these will all affect the modes of material nature. Sometimes I see them as dials on a, you know, a boombox, adjusting the treble and the bass and the volume, that we can adjust all these things by turning these knobs of what association, the time of day we do things. Do we wait to chant our rounds late at night, or do we chant them in the morning? These things will have an impact on our spiritual life. And if we don't acknowledge that, if we don't take up these practices that Prabhupada has given us, then we'll be subjected to the modes of material nature, And we won't be able to see things clearly. We won't be able to know how to get out. So we have this example of Chichiketu. He was beyond the modes of material nature. And so sometimes we hear about that, we think, well, that's not me, that's for sure. Look at what he did and look at how he did it. What does that have to do with me? But it does have to do with us, and especially Prabhupada's purports have to do with us. The acharyas, they give us the history. They look at the Puranas, the previous scriptures, and they give us the history of how these things happen. That Chitraketu, you know, Krishna, they'll talk about how Krishna wanted to take Chitraketu back to Godhead, and so he made this arrangement for Parvati to curse him, and how, he was the king of the Vijaharas, and he was traveling around with damsels chanting Hare Krishna, and he saw Lord Shiva, and they were just joking with each other, but Parvati didn't get the joke, and so she kind of acted, maybe overreacted. And we see those things, and we hear those things, and we think that's very nice to know all that, but in a way, it tends to take it away from us. It tends to take the lessons away from us because we think, well, it all happened by Krishna's arrangement. It all, you know, it was all scripted and I'm just reading the script. But really, our lives are a replay of these things. These, in a smaller scale, in a different setting, but still we're getting the situations, the same situations, the being cursed, the being goaded to agitation. Will we get agitated? Will we become equal poised? Will we be happy when something great happens, when we're traveling around in the plane with the pretty girls or boys? Or will we be equal? Will we be equal when the waves come, the good waves, the fantastic wave, the perfect wave? And will we succeed in understanding the bad waves, the apparent bad waves? I answer questions for Krishna.com email, and someone just wrote me the other day, how do I understand why I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I'm following the four regular principles, and bad things are still happening to me? How do I understand that? But what is a bad thing? Right? This is in this verse. It said, what is a bad thing? What is happiness? What is a bad thing? What is heaven? What is hell? Prabhupada said London was hell. The reporter asked him, is there heaven and hell? Prabhupada said, London is hell. The sun never shines here. It's hellish. So Prabhupada's vision of heaven and hell was different. When he was in New York, he was in Vrindavan. And when he was in London, he saw, this is hellish. Without Krishna, this place is hellish. So what is bad and what is good for the devotee, from what we understand from Srila Prabhupada, is that what takes us away from Krishna, that's hellish, that's bad. And what brings us to Krishna, that's good. And we see with Queen Kunti how she prayed that let calamities happen. Vipadaksantutasha svatatratata jagatguru bhavato darshanam yasya apuna bhavanar darshanam. Let them happen because they're good. What do you mean good? When I was a new devotee in Toronto, 3 years or so, we finally got the part of the Bhagavatam that had the prayers of Queen Kunti. And we were reading the prayers and we started to learn those prayers. So the ladies, we'd sit together and we'd memorize these prayers. We'd ever get to that prayer, we'd skip it. Because we were afraid to chant that prayer. So we wrote Srila Prabhupada, we asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, are we supposed to pray for calamities? And Prabhupada said, you don't need to pray for calamities. Calamities will come anyway. So, but if we see them as good, as desirable, if our vision changes, then these things will become lessons to us. They'll become impetuses to us to help us advance in spiritual life. We have many experiences of people in our Bhagavatam, in our disciplic succession, who went through many trials and tribulations. Bhaktivinoda Thakur with Vishvaksena, and Prahlad Maharaj with Hiranyakashipu. It's so many different experiences that appear to be very negative. Why do bad things happen to good people? Right? Why do bad things happen to good people? That's a very popular book written by a Jewish rabbi whose son died of old age at the age of 13. And he couldn't process it. His spiritual understanding didn't compute how his son, who'd never done anything wrong, was dying in this horrible way. Why do good things happen to, bad things happen to good people? And he came to the conclusion that sometimes things slip through the cracks. God's really busy. He's got a lot on his plate, you know. And sometimes he just doesn't catch everything. So something falls through the cracks, and then a bad thing happens to a good person. But in reality, he really, if he could, he would have good things only happen to good people. No bad things would happen to good people. And we see in the Judeo-Christian tradition, if God loves you, what do you look like? You're rich, you're famous, you're you know, everything goes right. You have a big car parked in front of the church, and you have a nice clothes, better than the guy living next door. You win the lottery because God loves you. That's why you win the lottery. But in our tradition, we don't understand that, right? We don't understand it that way. In Krishna book, Lord Shiva, there's the story of Lord Shiva and Krishna, the Vikasara story, where the person is, Parikit is asking, how come Lord Shiva's devotees seem very wealthy and very well taken care of, and Lord Krishna's devotees, they don't seem to have all their opulence and stuff. Maybe I'm worshiping the wrong person. Maybe I should do something else. And I had an experience. I went to a program in Toronto recently, and it was in somebody's very big house, like a big mansion. And we went in, they had big deities, you know, like big deities, not quite as big as Radha-Madhava, but big deities. And when we walked in, Krishna didn't have a flute. So I asked, I said, well, Krishna doesn't have a flute, he needs a flute. And I was told, well, Narayani was with me, and she said, some temples, they don't put the flute. And especially in rich houses, they don't put the flute. Because they say, if you hear the sound of Krishna's flute, you'll be so attracted that you'll give up all material pursuits. And then what's going to happen to the rest of the family, right? We won't get rich and famous anymore. This is a serious problem. So they keep Krishna's flute behind him. So we won't have to get that problem of listening to the sound of Krishna's flute. So we want to be attracted to Krishna, though, and we want to be able to see the material world as having no happiness. Prabhupada says in the second purport, or the 20th verse purport, that even the happiness in the material world isn't really happiness, it's misery. It's misery. And if we can get that, if we could process that in our head, then we won't necessarily look for that kind of happiness. If it comes, if it feels good, we get a little buzz, we'll understand it's temporary, and it's not really the happiness we're looking for. Right? In the nectar of instruction, the happiness that comes from Krishna Bhakti is described as being so much more intense, so much concentrated happiness, that it's like less than a drop of material happiness. There's no comparison. There's no comparison. So you go for the material happiness and you get cheated, you get misery, because that happiness, it gives you an illusion and it takes you away from the quest for real happiness. It takes you away because you become cheated, you become absorbed in looking for that glitter, and then you forget the ultimate goal of human life. So Prabhupada is guiding us, and he's giving us a different vision. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he gives Arjuna a different vision. He doesn't change the circumstance. When the Bhagavad Gita is over, they're still on the battlefield, and the fight is still gonna happen. Arjuna didn't wanna fight, and he said to Krishna, hey, I don't want to fight. That started the discussion. And the discussion took place on a battlefield. And when the discussion ended, nothing changed. The fight was still going to happen, and Krishna was still telling Arjuna, fight. And so Arjuna, what changed was his vision. His vision changed. The circumstance didn't change. But he was able to say, Karishye Vachanam Tava, because he had a different vision now. And so when we read Prabhupada's purports, and when we understand the nature of the material world and what to do in Krishna consciousness, and we take it up, we do it, we say, yes, now I've understand everything you said, and now I will do it, I will take action, then we get a different vision. we get a different vision, and this is the vision that that Chitraketu has now, that's going to carry him over even when he's a demon. He's still going to keep that vision. So he sees the situation changes markedly, right? Materially, it looks much worse than the other situation. But because he has the vision to process it properly, he's not at all affected. And his ability to ride the wave is not changed at all. It's the same thing. One way here, one way there, it doesn't make any difference. I'm just going to go forward in spiritual life and take this new adventure. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is a thrill at every moment. A thrill at every moment. And we think, yes, that means I'm going to travel and I'm going to see the world and I'm going to have great kirtans everywhere, but that's not what Prabhupada meant. A thrill at every moment maybe will come that way, but it's also going to come with a kick every moment. And how we'll be able to accept both the nectar and the pain and learn from both and move forward with determination to follow Srila Prabhupada's instruction and make his mission, his desire for us and all the fallen souls of the world successful. That's really what we need to do, and we need to take that up. We need to tell him, yes, on your order, now I will do what you say. So the sign here says the class is supposed to end at 8:45. But if there's any questions, I'll try to answer. The class is officially ended. And if there's any questions, I'll try to answer. Yes, Prabhu. Okay. Right.
And there are people out there, the majority, who are not focused, and the environment here is there for pulling down.
Mm.
So, in a place, which is not working for you, around people who are not taking good of you, they're very self-conscious. So now, isn't that natural, if in the given circumstance, to start hating the environment and hating the people over there, because like, they are not conducive for your advancement? Because the material world is there to bring you down, people are there to bring you down. So both of them are sort of natural for us to see them in that light. And is it not natural as a consequence to start hating those people? And then when we hear that, you have to be compassionate. Compassionate for what?
Let them suffer.
Not
those rascals. the attitude of a devotee, first of all, is a different vision, because the material world is benign. It's a bunch of stuff, trees and bhumir apanalo vayor. It's 16, made out of elements. That's what it is. That's the material energy. It's not charged one way or the other. Our vision of it and the other people's vision of it and the way they manipulate it, that causes problems. But we have to marvel at the expertise of Maya Devi. Because Maya Devi is a devotee. She's not a demon. So you can get mad at her if you want, but that's only going to cause trouble. That's what Chitraketu found out. You don't want to get mad at Maya Devi. Maya Devi's doing a job, and she's very good at it. She takes it very seriously. Her job is to see that no riffraff gets into the spiritual world. Right, so she's the security force for Goloka Vrindavan, and she takes that security very serious. She doesn't let any terrorists in. No one is allowed to go back to Godhead who doesn't want to put Krishna in the center, who has their own agenda. Sorry. So she creates, she moves the material nature and inspires us by the three modes of material nature to move the material energy in ways that cause trouble, in ways that bind us, that tie us in the three modes of material nature. However, Krishna gives us the instruction manual, many instruction manuals in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, and through his devotees, he gives us instruction through the Bhagavat. He gives us the instruction how to get out, right? How to cut the tree. It's described in the banyan tree analogy in the 15th chapter. How to cut that tree so that we can get out. Now, if we fail to take that axe, if we fail to take those instructions, don't get mad at them. They're just doing their job. I'm the one who's an idiot because I allowed the material energy to pull me, to push me, to take me where I didn't want to go, right? We read in the first verse of the Nectar of Instruction, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Uttara Pashta Vegam. Prabhupada translates that word Vegam occasionally as pushing. So we have a lot of experience with pushing, right? When we go down in the temple room, Mangal Arati, during holidays especially, there's a lot of pushing. And when there's pushing, you go where you didn't want to go. Sometimes you think you're going to go right into the fire or whatever. You know, especially during Damodar Ashtakam, you think, here's 10,000 people walking around with fire. Who's going to come out alive? Because there's so much pushing. And it's danger at every step. Padam, padam, right in the temple room. So you're being pushed. But it's described that someone who doesn't get pushed, right, who doesn't get pushed, that person is capable of taking disciples all over the world. So we have to practice not getting pushed. We have to practice not being subjected to the difficulties. And it's not that we want all the difficulties to go away, because if all the difficulties go away, then the good things would become difficulties. You see that in people's lives who are wealthy, for instance. Their wealth, their positive, their janmaishwarya, shrutashribhir, those things become their downfall. But for me, they're the things I aspire for in the material world. That's what I want. I want good birth. I want education. I want beautiful husbands and wives. I want, you know, material wealth. I want education. I want to be famous. And those very things will take me away from Krishna. That's why Kunti Devi said, how can people who are materially endowed, they can't know you. They can't know you. So what is good? What is bad? It really depends on us and our vision. So we have to look in the mirror and we have to say, I'm mad at you. And I want to straighten you out. Right? That's what Raghunath Das Goswami in his prayers to the mind, he talks to his mind, mind, you're just a rascal and you better straighten up. You know, don't waste your time with these stupid things. Get a life. So that's who we should get mad at, because the material world is just doing its thing. And we don't have to become affected by it. And if we're neophytes still and we need more protection because we're not really strong enough, then we should arrange for that protection. We should arrange for the association that we need. We should arrange to put into our lives those safety valves which will help us according to our present level of advancement. Don't blame, it's just like, I could make a little analogy, not to go off on a tangent, but sometimes when there's a fall down, a person of a certain gender gets blamed for that fall down, right? It's all their fault. Trying to be neutral here. Because, you know, they walk with a wiggle when they walk, or the way they dress, or the this or the that, and certainly we can do things to try and avoid or minimize. But the real issue is my attraction to the material world. And, you know, that person is walking around in a place where there's thousands of people and one person is attracted and it's that person's fault. What's wrong here? Why aren't the 99 other million people, you know, attracted? They're not. So it's something wrong with me. It's something I'm seeing because my vision has cataracts. So if I need to be protected, then let me be protected. I heard in the Swami Narayan camp, they don't let sannyasis go anywhere by themselves. They have to go with an entourage everywhere. So if you need to do that, do it. But Prabhupada wanted us to preach, so that's a bit of a problem. But we have to become serious about our spiritual life and able to swim in the ocean and make it to the shore. That's our job. Yes, Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu. Mataji, sorry.
Some devotees divide their life as a material and a spiritual.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
Because they wish to earn money to maintain their life. So sometimes they cannot have a regular association with devotees. I can understand they have some attachment of the material things. So just like you just mentioned that you go to a beach house, they're hiding the Krishna's flute and bags. because they have the attachment of the material things. So sometimes, just like you say, that we should learn Srimad Bhagavata, Srila Prabhupada's word, and then we understand it, and then we practice. So such as that devotee, they say that because they have an attachment of the material thing, they have not very strong faith to practice. So how should we understand to get more faith to just practice what Srila Prabhupada taught us?
Well, in several places, not the least of which is in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the 3rd verse in the purport, Prabhupada says, faith is built by the association of devotees. So we really need to take the association of devotees. Devotees hold up our faith. If we associate with faithless people, we will become faithless. If we engage in prajalpa, that will erode our faith. We need to associate with people who are inspirational and who build our faith. First of all, the first thing you said is that they see their material life and their spiritual life is different. And that's a mistake. Because look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he certainly had an active material life in one sense. He was a judge and a high court judge, and he tried many cases very quickly, very efficiently. He had to hear, I'm sure, all kind of nonsense, you know, that was going on in the court system. But that part of his life was facilitating him, for one thing, raising Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and for writing so many books, and for preaching actively, and ultimately for building and writing, and so many different things that he did to support the spread of Krishna consciousness all over the world. It gave him a name, it gave him power within a certain category of people where he would have had no power before. So it gave him some power to be heard in situations where ordinarily he wouldn't have been heard. So if we see, again, it's our vision that if we see a situation and we try to analyze how this situation can help me in my spiritual life, that will also build my faith. Because the more I endeavor to take whatever I have and sincerely pray to the Lord to be able to use it in His service, then we'll see Krishna's hand in our life. And Krishna may do different things. He may move us, He may not move us. With Chitraketu, we had one situation where he was traveling around in an airplane with a lot of beautiful women doing sankirtan. So that was a great situation, and he was thinking, well, you know, this is a nice situation. I'm head of this, the Vidyadharas, and I have all these followers that happen to be beautiful ladies, and it looks good. But when Krishna said, okay, well, I think that situation is not so good anymore, you've learned everything you can learn in that situation, now let me change it, he was, okay, you'll change it, I'll be a demon, no problem. And I go ahead and I still see what in that situation now I can use in Krishna's service. So I associate with people who have it, or at least are aspiring for that vision, and that vision will come to you. So, we all talk about getting association, but we won't get association if we're not association, because it's a two-way street. Who's going to be the association if we're not the association? So we have to not only get association, we have to be association. So how we can help is be that kind of association, that enlivening, inspiring, uplifting association who helps people see things differently, gives them a different vision. Helps them to do cataract surgery so that they can actually see Krishna's hand in their lives and move forward appropriately. Is that helpful? Hare Krishna. I think I should end now. Oh, one more. Sorry. Okay.
Since God can do anything, why does He make the material world so that it's also eternal and full of bliss?
But then it wouldn't be the material world. Then it would be the spiritual world.
In the spiritual world, everybody has to serve Krishna. And the people who don't want to be part of that, so they get thrown into the material world. But they have to suffer so much, from the highest to the lowest, it's all a place of misery. Why can't God make the all good?
Our constitutional position is to serve Krishna. And the unfortunate reality is there's no such thing as all good. What's good to the people in Nazi Germany isn't necessarily good to the people in Israel. So, past tense. So what I think is good requires that everyone has their own planet. In order to do what you say, everyone would have to have their own planet. And in that planet, everybody else on the planet would have to accept that I'm the supreme decider of what's good and bad. And then we could have a copacetic situation. But if one person or five people or 10 people decide that what they want is different than what I want, then immediately there's going to be conflict. So in order to have everything good and comfortable in the material sense, we would need each person to have their own planet. And that no one wants to be alone, right? So no one wants to be alone on a planet. So that means some people would have to agree to being your chelas so that they could see things the way you want them, and then they could be on your planet. So maybe not everyone has their own planet. There's, you know, how many ever people you need on your planet to make it work going to surrender to you. That's a very, you know, that's a, it gets very complicated. And then if you get somebody on your planet who said they would agree to everything you did, but then you do something and they don't like it, then immediately your planet's going to become uncomfortable. So this is the ramifications of the material world, because in the material world, by nature, everybody's thinking, what's in it for me? I'm the center. If Krishna is not the center, someone's got to be the center. I'm the center. And therefore, I decide what's good. So the Eskimos think good is a nice igloo, and the, you know, the people in Florida think any temperature below 70 degrees is hellish. So this gets complicated when you try and figure it out practically. Is that helpful? Maybe. You don't look convinced. Right. Right, because otherwise, if we're not serving Krishna, then we're serving my false ego. Those are the two options. So I'm either serving Krishna or I'm serving my concept of myself, which has with it a whole bunch of what's happiness is. What's happiness to the pig is different than what's happiness to the racehorse. So for the pig to be totally in a place where he's always happy, the racehorse isn't going to be happy. So we need a planet for racehorses to be happy. We need a planet for pigs to be happy. We need a planet for Americans to be happy. That's going to be hard because the resources, there are going to be a lot of them. And, you know, someplace else, it will be very little, very less, and they'll be happy. So it gets very complicated. It gets very complicated. That's why Krishna has to be in the center. We have to worry about his happiness. Then we become happy automatically, except that we have to believe that initially. We have to believe that Krishna's happiness will give, that's the ultimate with him. That's the ultimate what's in it for me, is Krishna's happy and I'm automatically happy. But we don't believe that. We try to make the situation just the way I want it. And even when we do that, the happiness only lasts for a little while, and then we have to do something else. And that's the cause of the problem. That's why we're here. So I should end now. It's a little late. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki.